WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me is Kay Sawyer Paul. How you doing?
Not bad.
Good. Not bad. We are continuing our SummerSlam main event series, and you get all the fun ones. Today we have a SummerSlam main event of 1995. Diesel defending the WWF Championship against King Mabel.
Can I just say something?
You are welcome to say something.
This is a great job. I think we do good work.
Yeah.
I generally enjoy what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you came to me with this idea for SummerSlam matches, you said, which... And we've either done most of the ones that I've wanted to do or will do some of the ones that I want to do still. And then you said, you need to do 95.
Yes.
And I said... Why do you hate me, Jason? Why do you hate me? Isn't there someone we know who really loves this kind of stuff? Right? Because I try to be a positive person, and I would love to see an analysis by a person who knows this style of wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I say style loosely. This quality of match, and I say quality loosely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Diesel matches in general. And I say matches, loosely.
Okay.
There's got to be somebody out there where this is his oeuvre. But no, you've got me instead. And I try to be positive, and I will try to stay somewhat positive about this.
Okay.
But I got to say, this was the first day at Fair to Flair where I was like, I'm going to work now.
Well, you know, first in 5 months, it's pretty good, I would have to say.
I guess.
So.
Not bad.
I think
good while it lasted.
Yeah, I think there's two interesting things about this match.
Mm-hmm.
I think one is King Mabel, sort of the out-of-nowhere-ness of him suddenly becoming a huge dominant monster and getting this, you know, being picked of all the people at the time to get the run against Diesel. I think that's sort of interesting. It's sort of interesting how that has and hasn't worked over the years with a couple of different guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second thing that's interesting is that this tries very hard to be a Hulk Hogan match. And I think would have worked all right if it had been a Hulk Hogan in this match, but kind of completely fails when Diesel tries to do the Hogan formula. And I'm not saying that...
So explain that to me, because I sort of see what you mean, but at the same time, I think you need to help out the kids a little with
I
what
will.
You mean by Hulk Hogan formula.
I definitely will, without a doubt. I think one thing that's underrated about Hulk Hogan in big man matches is his ability to draw sympathy from the crowd. And that's kind of through how he sells sort of the big man's you know power moves. He kind of will do some of the writhing and pain. Just his connection with the people in general, and mm-hmm. And how he sells like the big like the slams and some of the big moves as huge feats of strength. So when he's able to finally get the big man off his feet, give him a slam. Whatever, it seems like a huge accomplishment.
Mm.
And Diesel, while he has his strengths both as a character and as a performer, is a guy who's a little bit too cool for school in a lot of ways. Like, there's a pre-match promo where he says he's going to get medieval on Mabel, and it just comes off as he's trying to be really angry, and he's totally not convincing at all. And
mm-hmm.
then during the match, it just, like... he's not able to evoke sympathy. Like, it's basically like a match between equals for the most part. Yeah, there's a couple of things where, like, you know, Mabel shoulder blocks him down or he doesn't quite go down on the moves, but Diesel gets through him pretty easily. Like, there's not much degree of difficulty here. And although the funny thing is, the crowd actually does not hate this match. Like, they're pretty into, like, there's a couple moments of a little bit of a dead period, but later on, like, they actually, you know, get into it. There's a Lex Luger run in, which is kind of random, which we'll kind of get into, but you know, they actually they're sort of into the finish and sort of into it more than I would remember, and based and more than I would expect based on the quality of the match.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked by how much the crowd enjoyed the, because I don't know what they enjoyed. I if you were to say, give me the things in this match that you really fan, I don't know what it is. I, you know, like what you said, this is a failed attempt at a Hogan match.
Yeah. Diesel did do a plancha, which surprised me.
He was known to do the odd plancha.
Oh, was he? Okay, I don't remember that for whatever reason. And it was weird because, like, it was like totally, like, out of nowhere. Like, and it didn't get much of a reaction either. I guess if he'd done it before, maybe people were just used to it. But I thought that was a very strange, and it wasn't really put over big by Vince or Doc Hendricks on commentary.
Do you not remember Kevin Nash in early TNA against the X Division?
I may not have watched a whole lot of that, so.
It's good, because he didn't ever plancha, but, okay. You know, he claimed to have done it all the time, and okay, There's proof in this match, at least.
Okay. I remember, the only parts I really remember that was him and Alex Shelley being funny. Other than that, I don't really remember that too much.
Good times.
Yeah.
And I do think that they missed the value of Kevin Nash while he was WWE champion. They sort of had it before he became champion because he was this sort of menacing tall guy.
Yeah.
Right? And after he lost the belt, he became this sort of interesting, cool, funny guy. And then he went off to WCW, and I think, you know, the logical conclusion of his character as Kevin Nash there.
Yeah.
But during his reign as WWE champion, for as long as it was, I don't feel like they ever used Kevin Nash in the way that Kevin Nash should be used. And that is somebody who's a little too cool for school, but you have to change the kinds of matches you're in.
Yes.
If you're going to be a character like that.
Right.
Like, you can't be sympathetic towards Nash, and that's fine. You can have matches where you're not sympathetic towards a guy, but this isn't one of those matches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, like, there's a good laundry list of good Kevin Nash matches. People don't think of him as a great worker, but there are quite a few matches that don't involve Shawn Michaels that are pretty good with him. But he wrestles in a certain way in those matches that work for him.
Yeah, he's usually aggressive. He's usually kind of, there's a lot of brawling. He's, you know, it's more of him being the monster as opposed to being the, you know, the virtuous, the, you know, good guy, so to speak.
Absolutely. So he's like the monster that winks at the camera.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I like that.
Right? I think that's Nash's value, but there's just zero of that here.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's not allowed to be a proper monster. Because I do wonder if maybe this match would have been better if they just literally fed Mabel to him.
Okay.
Like, if Mabel just got, like, no offense. Because it's not like any of Mabel's offense was particularly menacing.
Right.
I don't know that Mabel was a good choice.
No.
At the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was, you know, I would compare this to, let's, like, I mean, Men on a Mission was, like, a half a step up from the Bushwhackers. I mean, if Bushwhacker Luke had turned heel and fought Hulk Hogan in 1990, I don't think anyone would have bought that. So,
mm-hmm.
So,
you know, that's a really good point. I never looked at, I know Men on a Mission was sort of a worthless tag team, but I never looked at them as like Bushwhackers level, because at least the Bushwhackers were beloved in an odd way. Like, I don't think they ever had the tag team championships. They were never a particularly successful team.
Right.
But people loved the Bushwhackers.
They did, yeah. Yeah, people did love the Bushwhackers. And, yeah, I don't think,
I don't think people ever loved Men on a Mission.
No, yeah. And they were just so, like, I mean, it was such a blatant attempt to, like, target, I mean, to like use like rap music, I guess, to be into that, but it was so dated. It was like 10 years out of date. And
let's be honest, we're using rap music loosely here.
Yes, yes. I mean, it was one of the more dated things that they would have had at the time. I mean, they were just so not plugged into pop culture at all. It's just funny.
No, the whole new generation era was just a blind spot.
Yeah.
For tapping into the zeitgeist, they just couldn't.
Yeah, and it's funny that they were so well. They were better at it and considered awesome at it in the late 90s. You know, I'm not sure exactly how really great they were at it, but they certainly were better at it by then. You know,
mm-hmm.
they found a few things that connected with the audience anyway. So, Mabel had won King of the Ring kind of out of nowhere. He just turned right before then. There a couple of times sort of the out of nowhere thing works, like with JBL, for instance, who kind of went from being, with the APA and sort of just being kind of the APA had kind of already run its course and they were just sort of doing nothing. And then suddenly he's this, millionaire from Texas who's and fighting Eddie for the world championship. And even then that one was really quick, but that one worked out in the long term. But for the most part, I would say instantly trying to rush a guy, even a guy, I mean, obviously Mabel's a huge guy, you can make him into a monster. I think he was actually fairly successful as a monster sort of later in the 2000s. I mean, he never had a big run, but he certainly improved. He certainly understood how to wrestle the big man role at that point and, had some decent things here or there.
Does Mabel have like a Mark Henry contract or something?
Well, he came, he left and came back. Like he came back in 99 as Viscera. And I wonder if he had like debuted in 99 during the Attitude Era and like just had like years of seasoning, in not WWF exposure, if he had been more successful because he was better then. And and he could have been, he wouldn't have had the taint of being King Mabel. I mean, that was really like a thing, like that was one of those almost like career killing, like Red Rooster type things, you know?
I'm sorry, who's the Red Rooster?
I don't know.
I'm not familiar with his work.
Okay. So anyway, yeah, basically after Mabel left here, I mean, he was around for a while, but he didn't last. I don't think he lasted very much through 96. He was pretty much done by 96, so.
Mm.
And this is obviously late 95, so.
There's anything to really say about this match.
I'll go over a couple things. They mentioned British Bulldog had recently turning on Diesel, just part of the Royal Plan, as they called it. And he's mentioned as being in the arena, but then he doesn't actually show up at all during the match, which is kind of weird. But usually they hinted those things, and then they happen, of course. Mabel basically overpowers him for a little bit. In the middle of it, he screams, "I'm going to be the first black champion." And gets booed. I don't know if people heard what he said. He just sort of was screaming. But
which is untrue. They, Ron Simmons predates him by several years.
Well, I don't think he was necessarily counting the WCW title. But anyway. Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate when the companies can't, acknowledge each other's reigns. And I will give Diesel a little bit of credit for kind of hustling on some of these things. Like he does some pretty hard clotheslines into the corner. He's actually he is making the effort here, I would say, for the most part. And it wasn't like Kevin Nash's strength was always making the effort.
That's true.
Yeah. So he is able to, after those clotheslines, he tries the slam and Mabel blocks it. And usually when someone tries the slam earlier in the match, they're going to land the slam later in the match, but that does not happen, which I found kind of strange.
Mm.
Like he doesn't even try it later,
No.
He works over Mabel for a little bit. He knocks him down, then hits a shoulder block to the back, which sends him out of the ring. Mabel at this point looks winded, and we're barely like 3 or 4 minutes into the match. And, you know, Mabel's a big fat guy, so I guess it's kind of understood. This is when Diesel does the plancha, with which does not get any sort of reaction. They do a little bit of stuff outside. Diesel gets sent into the post. Mabel charges and runs into a boot, which right into the kisser, Vince says, which I always enjoy, right into the kisser as far. I also liked it when Vince would call, would say Keister. That was always a good one, too.
Keister's good, yeah.
Keister's good, yeah. So we're both in. Mabel begs off for a bit. Diesel works him over with some elbows and forearms and knee lifts. Then Mabel is able to reverse a whip. He tries a boss man slam, although you can tell Diesel does most of the work on it. Then I guess the one notable thing is he does the he basically jumps on top of Diesel's back and lands full force with the butt splash, which usually the butt splashes by the big fat guys miss. Like Vader's butt splash is pretty much always missed. So. But he does land it. And then Doc Hendricks, an example of his awesome commentary was, if you ever talked about sitting down on the job, that was his sort of witty thing that he said, which, of course, was not actually witty. So
we can point out here that Doc Hendricks is not a very good commentator, right?
We can definitely point that out. I think it was mostly the character as opposed to being, you know, basically Doc Hendricks was the forerunner for Don West.
And now I can't forget that.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm glad I just planted that in your head. So
yeah.
I feel good about that. Diesel's thrown hard into the corner, which the corner pad actually rips off when he does that. But they don't use the corner at all. Like, there's a bunch of like things that are like hinted at or like foreshadowed and then don't happen.
It's like, true.
Yeah. Like, you figure when the corner pad's going to come off, somebody's head's going to get thrown in it, but that doesn't happen. Now, maybe it was an accident, but regardless, Mabel works on Diesel's back for a while, and then Diesel was able to power out of the sitting thing. This is the first moment where I notice Sir Mo, who I'd kind of forgotten, also turned along with Mabel, which I might be the first time that – I mean, tag teams have turned together, but when a tag team wrestler turns and becomes a big singles wrestler, his partner turns along with him. Like, I can't remember that ever happening. Usually the partner will turn and go on to bigger and better things, and the other one will languish or feed with him or whatever.
I'm sorry, was Mo ever, like, a guy we ever saw by himself?
No. No.
Right, so he exists purely as a thing with Mabel.
Yeah, but he and Mabel were roughly equals in the team.
In what way?
Well, I mean, they were both presented as roughly equal threats. Mabel was bigger, but Mo was also, you know, in theory, you know, his – I mean, they were, in theory, equal partners. It wasn't like Mabel was, like, the ass kicker of the team and Mo was, like, the guy carrying on. I mean, they both were roughly, you know, the same guy, with Mabel just kind of being a little bit more physically impressive.
I don't remember a single thing about Mo.
Okay. Well, I wonder,
was there a third guy? I want to say that there was Oscar.
Yeah, Oscar was the manager, and he actually, I think Oscar did the rapping. Like, I don't think the actual men on a mission did that much rapping. And Oscar was, and they turned on Oscar. Oscar was sent out of the picture.
Mm.
So, I wonder what Cornette was up to, though, because Cornette could have been the mouthpiece, and that would have been better, I think.
Well, Cornette. Yokozuna and Owen Hart, which is interesting, because that's actually how this show finishes off, right? There's the ending of where Diesel clotheslines Mabel and then pins him.
Clotheslines
him.
Yeah,
Kevin Nash has like three finishing moves, and a clothesline is not one of them.
Right.
Right. It's, and you couldn't powerbomb him, but you couldn't choke slam him or something that looked definitive. Just clothesline pinning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was
kind of more of a it's kind of more like the forearm. Like, it was almost like the LT finish at WrestleMania 11. One other thing before we get to the finish is we have Luger run in, of all things, And this is sort of when, after there's a ref bump, Mabel kind of bumps into the ref while charging into the ropes, misses an elbow. Then Mo comes in. They double team Diesel. He fends them off. And then Luger does the run in. And everyone, you know, like, cheers. And then Diesel, like, nails him and clotheslines him over the top rope, which the announcers explain because they think that Luger might turn on him because his tag partner Bulldog had just turned on him. And then Mabel drops a leg on Diesel's throat. Luger goes after Mo and then chases him around to the back. And then so we don't see Luger again. I don't believe we see Luger again in WWE because I think he jumped to WCW. Maybe he might have done one more Raw thing, but it was not long after this. I mean, it was like 2-3 weeks later.
He was nice and done. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was just an interesting. Yeah, obviously they were going to go somewhere, I assume, but wherever they went, obviously had to be changed. So Mabel does a belly to belly, which I think was his only nice bit of offense during the match, which got it to, and the crowd wakes up for that. They were into that kick out. And then Mabel goes to the second rope. Diesel moves out of the way. As you said, he goes up to the second rope, drags himself up there, and hits the clothesline forearm-ish thing for three. And yeah, it gets the Hebner very, very slow count because he'd been bumped. So so that was, yeah, it was an odd finisher.
I loved the bump. Mabel's running, runs into the referee,
yeah,
doesn't even notice that he hits the referee.
Right.
Keeps on going.
Yeah, I was unclear on whether that was an accident or intentional. The commentators put it over sort of as, I think they said intentional, but they weren't really clear on that either. So,
man, if you like to summarize this match, I think you said it best. There were some things that were supposed to happen, and I'm not sure if they did or not.
Yeah, or they were definitely teasing it for sure. So yeah, the Luger running really went nowhere. I guess other than to get Mo out of there. You know, Bulldog didn't happen. It just, yeah, a lot of things they were, you know, throwing in there, you know, red herrings, I guess, that they never pulled off.
Hmm.
So
hmm.
Strange. But yeah, Diesel moved on to a feud with the British Bulldog, which did not click very well. And if I recall correctly, they had a match the next pay-per-view that the fans ended up booing Diesel at the end of it. And then they, Vince, I think even, I don't think this was shown on camera, but I remember reading an article about Vince like yelling at them both after the match because of how bad the match was.
Or I would absolutely believe that.
Yeah.
I would yell at my employees if they did something like this on my show.
Yeah.
Certainly. This is you've been doing WrestleMania main events, you've been doing SummerSlam main events. Like, of all the SummerSlam main events that you've seen, is this not the worst one of all?
Yeah, it's close. I mean, I would say the Undertaker one was pretty bad, but I think it is a little better than this.
I would say it's an order of magnitude better than this, if only because everything they promised on, they delivered.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that match makes more sense. This match doesn't really, like, there's a lot of things that just kind of don't really make sense, and they don't, you know, they don't have a good plan
when,
for where they're going.
When your argument is Undertaker made sense, but this doesn't. You got a bad match, son.
Yes, I think that's fair. I think that's a good point. Yeah. So, yes.
I don't know. I look at the main events of every single SummerSlam, and even the ones that I found disappointing are still way better than this.
I would agree. This is the worst SummerSlam main event. Although it's still not nearly as bad as some of the really bad WrestleMania main events. So it's at least watchable. I mean, there's nothing like. You know, it's quick enough. There's no, like, really slow point. There's no huge major mistakes in it. I mean, you know, it's not completely incompetent like some other matches I've seen. So I still would kind of put it more in the humdrum category as opposed to the actual, like, you know, awful, you know, completely abysmal category. But it's certainly not good.
I think it's pretty after the main event is over. They don't, like, celebrate the end of the show. They cut to Gorilla Monsoon, who immediately announces the main event of the next show.
Right.
right? The main event being Shawn Michaels and Diesel versus Owen Hart and Yokozuna in an every title on the line match.
Ah, okay, yes.
Which, to me, reeks of apology. It reeks of, okay, you just sat through that. But, please don't walk away.
We're going to give you something fun and different.
Yeah, this will be good, we promise.
Yes. So.
And it was, I think. But, yeah, very rarely are they, like, immediately after the match is over, whoa, wait, don't leave. We've got something else. Would you be interested in these?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well.
And then they do the highlight reel of the show, which is something they didn't do, I think. Was that the first time they ever did that?
I'm not sure. I honestly don't know that. You know, if anyone has a good sense of that, they should tell us, because I'd be curious to know the answer to that.
Yeah, the little video package at the end of a pay-per-view that summarizes just what happened over the last 2 or 3 hours. To amazing music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the SummerSlam jam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the B-side to the WrestleMania jam.
Yeah, it's the even worse version of that song.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll be playing it in the clubs in a few years. It'll get
It'll get the irony treatment?
Yeah.
Good.
We can only hope. The world needs more irony. All right. Well, anyway, of course, we're going to be continuing the SummerSlam main event series. Keep checking out WrestleSpective.com and FairToFlare.com for more of that up until the day of SummerSlam 2011. And, of course, you should check out the Footnotes of Wrestling, which is the only wrestling news source you will ever need. And so keep on listening, and thanks, and goodbye.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flare Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flare Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flare Quarterly today at FairToFlare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.